Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center presents Doc Talk, an informative health series educating our community on the services provided at Peace Health. We will begin with our host, George Henry, after these messages.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
I am a two-time breast cancer survivor and a big believer in mammograms. I do think they are very important. As a cancer survivor, the journey can be very difficult, but with the right people by your side, anything is possible.
At Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center, you have access to advanced technology and mammogram screenings with enhancements to ensure your comfort. Request your appointment today at peacehealth.org/yes-mamma, because beating cancer is our mission.
On the November edition of Doc Talk, we have Dr. John Stanger is here today. He's an MD, a podiatrist, as a matter of fact. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me here.
So tell me a little bit about your background. Where do you hail from originally?
I originally come from Utah. I went to undergraduate school at Weber State. Great, great, great. Same place as Damian Lillard, who people will recognize,
yes,
I think.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
I've spent most of my life in Utah growing up there, and went to medical school out here in Oregon, and that's how I fell in love with the Pacific Northwest. So,
what made you choose medicine?
Great question. That is not what I signed up for in life.
I hear that from a lot, believe it or not. It's surprising.
Yeah. I started out running a bunch of small companies back in Utah, and my wife was actually going to college at Weber State as well, obtaining her degree in health administration. And she said, you know, John, I think you should go to college. And I said, nope.
No one. It's weird when your wife says that. I mean, mom and dad. Yeah. Mom and dad are pretty much about that. But yeah,
yeah. No one in my family really did that. We either joined the military, ran small businesses, that sort of thing. My eldest brother is the only one in our family at that point to have gone to college, and he went all the way, obtained a doctorate in mathematics of all things. And she said, "I really think you should give it a shot." And I said, "Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I've been running some small companies. Why don't I just go try to get a business degree? Why don't we try that?" And somewhere along the line, I took some science classes and kind of fell in love and found my people, so to speak. That's the rest is ancient history.
So I kind of hear your wife obviously saw something in you, or maybe in the rest of the family after a doctorate in mathematics, probably saw a unique spark in you that you might have been missing.
Yeah, I've kind of always been a tinker. I like to, play out in the shop, work with my hands. That's something that has been factored into most of my life. And medicine was a natural gravitation towards that, to fixing things. And so I believe she saw that in me and thought, we'd had our own experiences with physicians and thought, maybe I could bring a different touch to that.
Now, when she mentioned you going to college, was she already thinking medical school while you were still thinking business school? Did she have that? Have you asked her that?
Oh, yeah. She knew it was.
She saw it before you did.
She saw it. She said, I've known some people that, went on to medicine, and I think you would be good at that. I think that's something you could add value to.
Wow.
And very, very smart lady. We've been married 20 years.
You owe her a lot.
I do. I owe her everything.
Well, that's pretty awesome. I'm getting kind of choked up here. So how does tinkering and podiatry work together?
A bit more about me then. I had no idea what podiatry was as I was going to undergraduate school. I got involved with pre-medical stuff and helping other people get into medical school, and I pursued regular medical school. So for the listeners out there, I would say that there's three types of medical school. There's MD, which most of us are familiar with, medical doctor. There's DO, which is osteopathic physician. It's essentially the same thing as an MD, except they do some manipulation, but for lack of better words, anyone seeing a doctor today are not going to know the difference between an MD or a DO. And then the third type is what I am, a doctor of podiatric medicine. And I did not seek that out. I went to osteopathic school at Western University in Lebanon, Oregon. I had my choice of many medical schools I could have gone to, but I really liked that one. And that's what brought me out here to Oregon. And I trained there for 3 years. And what I was looking for was the ability to tinker and fix things instead of sitting behind a computer. And I did not think I was going to accomplish that there. And I had an excellent dean who saw something in me, and she said, I want to introduce you to something called podiatry. And she sent me up to Portland to shadow one of her personal friends. And I immediately fell in love because it's working with your hands. Most of what I do, if you come see me in the clinic, I'm working with my hands to get you a better outcome or better sense of life. And there's a surgical component to that too. And so I transferred down to their podiatry school down in California and finished out my course. So
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Sorry. Long story to say, I like to work with my hands.
I like to work with your hands. What did you see yourself doing, operating small businesses? What was your long-term goal before medical school?
Well, if it isn't acutely obvious, my wife is the planner, and I had no long-term goals. My goal was just to get through life.
Enjoying it and having a good time.
Yeah, I certainly bounced around. Coming out of some of those small businesses, I ended up in architectural glass, where we would manufacture glass and install it in some big buildings all across the world.
We have that in common. I owned my own glass shop for years.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, I was involved in both the manufacturing and design aspect, as well as leading I call them the team of Russians, a bunch of Kyrgyzian immigrants that we would go all around the world and install some custom pieces. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it was
so we'll have to have a conversation about extruded aluminum and insulated glass somewhere down the road here.
Oh, okay, great.
Sounds like fun. Well, I tell you what do you have an interest in the outdoors? Because a lot of people that end up in Florence usually hear that. Are you just kind of a indoor computer kind of guy?
I am not an indoor computer kind of guy. Growing up in Utah, I was exposed to the mountains, lakes, streams all the time. And that was one of my biggest draws to Oregon. And while I lived in Lebanon going to medical school, we often spent a lot of time out here on the coast, mostly in Newport. And then, of course, hiking the mini trails and just getting outside. And so that's been a big draw for me to be here.
Dr. John Stanger's a podiatrist here at Peace Harbor Hospital, and we'll talk more about some of the things that he enjoys and kind of what his specialty is all about right after this.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. There are patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
With flu season just around the corner, now is the prime time to schedule your annual flu shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control recommend that everyone aged 6 months and older, and especially older adults, get vaccinated against the flu. Peace Health Medical Group in Florence has adult and pediatric flu shots available. Call 541-997-7134 to make an appointment for your flu shot today. It only takes a minute and helps protect you, your family, and the community this flu season. So call 541-997-7134 today.
Joining me for the November edition of Doc Talk, Dr. John Stanger is here, and he's over at Peace Harbor Hospital. Talk a little bit about podiatry for the common person and what that entails. I mean, obviously, it's got something to do with feet, right?
Yeah, and you know, that was my first introduction to it too. Is, you know, at that when I first learned what it was, I understood the Latin that podo meant foot, but I didn't really know what that entailed. And so, you know, if I meet somebody on the street and they're like, you know, what do you do? And I say I'm a podiatrist. Well, what's that? I would generally tell people I am a foot and ankle specialist. If there's any question that you have in terms of pain or medical anything in terms of the foot and ankle, I'm your guy. Drastically different from our regular doctors who do so much for us. Having gone to a regular medical school, I can tell you that not a lot is learned about the foot and ankle specifically, because you have to learn a little bit about everything. And so if you're after someone who knows everything you possibly can know about the foot and ankle, that's what I'm here for.
I would think, and of course I don't know this as a fact, I haven't researched this or anything, but you know, your stance and your foundation seems to be a very important part of the physical aspect of your body and how you carry yourself and how you stay healthy through life. Is that an accurate observation?
That is a completely accurate observation. My personal philosophy is to keep you moving through anything that we can do for you. The average human body puts 1.5 to 3 times their body weight through their foot and ankle bones every single time you take a step out the door. And that's important. We all have them and we all need them, and we need it to get us through the rest of life.
When I was a young man, my sister had her first son, Matthew, and he had a weird gait, I guess. It was a little off. They broke his ankles and then reset them and put him in a cast and everything. What would be one of the reasons for something like that? What is that, just an anomaly in the way you were born, or is that something common, uncommon?
It varies on both common and uncommon. I would say that there's a statistical percentage of people, as they develop in the womb, may be positioned in not quite the most ideal way, and it can lead to a common deformity called clubfoot. Now, this is something we typically see in youth from other countries, but it still persists here in the United States from time to time. Mm-hmm. There are other abnormalities just from advancing in gestation within the womb that can cause foot and ankle deformities like that, that we can address both conservatively and surgically. And so I would say that a lot of that stuff ends up at the major orthopedic hospitals like Shriners here in Portland. But I see a fair amount of it where I came from in Denver as well. And so it's definitely something I could treat if we had that here locally.
It's interesting. I thought it may be hereditary, because I notice my wife gives me a hard time, because when I walk, I'm like, you know, the Oregon Duck.
Awesome.
You know, out there. So I have to mentally correct myself with doing that, when I'm thinking, well, gee, maybe if I'd have just had that done, that would be. Is that a bad way to walk?
It's not a bad way. And if I could communicate anything to people, I often will have someone come in and tell me, hey, I walk a certain way and I don't like it. And when I'll say, well, does it hurt? Does it bother you? And no, then we'll leave it alone. The body goes through a natural progression of the toes turning in versus the toes turning out just as we develop. And what's really common here locally with our retired population and aging population is the foot will naturally flatten out, and we will naturally turn outwards and walk like a duck for balance as we lose some of our ability to have good balance as we age.
Yeah, but I've always walked like a duck, and I got pretty high insoles there. I mean, I guess it's just the family trait or
just
something.
Just lucky you.
So I need to tell my wife to quit bugging me about it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I got it on tape now. So podiatrist, podiatric physician, podiatric surgeon, kind of give me the three differences there.
Yeah, so for most people, there really isn't a difference. Here in the United States, these are all drastically considered the same thing. There was a time, much with any historical medicine aspect, where the traditional pathway of a physician would be 4 years of undergraduate work at a university, 4 years of medical school or podiatry school, speaking directly about a podiatrist, and then something called a residency. This is where a person is a doctor, but they're receiving advanced training in a very specific subject, whether that's family medicine, internal medicine, cardiology, et cetera. Now, our original MD and DO physicians didn't necessarily complete a residency initially when they would graduate school, and that's something that they advanced along the lines. Well, podiatry took a very similar route. And in the beginning, podiatrists didn't complete a residency either. They'd become a physician and jump straight to taking care of patients either conservatively or operatively. And so there became a need for residency. And so some of those term differences came from that. There would be podiatrists who opted to not do surgery, and they would just do something called wound care for diabetic patients, and they would just refer to themselves as a podiatric physician. Well, then the surgical ones wanted to distinguish themselves and say, I offer surgery.
Well, of course the surgeons do.
Yes, of course we do. We want to be known for what we do, you know, and so you'll see that drastically. You can even see on my jacket here, I think it says foot and ankle surgeon. So, but in reality, the name is the same in the United States. A podiatrist outside the United States does differ.
So I was going to ask you that because you mentioned before we went on the air that a podiatrist out of the country is different. So what's the differentiating factor there?
Yeah, so we do see I don't know if physician is the right term, but we do see people calling them podiatrists in other countries like Australia and Europe and England, and they may be more focused on wound care and likely to not have surgical privileges. They may be more attuned to like a pedicurist here locally, and not to diminish their work because they do good work, and it usually is medical based in terms of taking care of wounds and whatnot. But usually what we see outside the country is lack of surgical privileges.
Okay. So that would be the main difference there.
Yeah.
This is off topic, but what's the difference between a DO and a chiropractor?
So since I did go to osteopathic school, I can actually answer that one. Yeah. So there's not a ton of difference other than chiropractors don't actually get advanced medical training. So the root of that stems from a guy named A.T. Still or Andrew Taylor Still, who is the founding father of osteopathic medicine. He was an M.D. In Missouri and saw a need to develop a more holistic approach to, you know, how we treated people. This is back in the days where they were using morphine and all kinds of bad things,
bloodletting,
all that stuff. So it was, if my understanding is correct, and someone would have to fact check me, but it was one of his sons who branched off and started chiropractic work. And it's basically just using the manipulation that Andrew Taylor Still had initially developed, and that has advanced along the lines. And so I used to teach some of the manipulation at the medical school, and I would say that there's a lot of crossover that the DOs will do in terms of manipulation that the chiropractors will also do. Some techniques that are very similar and identical.
So had it not been for a very aware dean, you might have stayed with DO instead of going up to Portland.
Yeah, I might be cracking necks. And
hey, nothing wrong with that. Yeah, it's a good job. What are some of the reasons someone would come see you?
Pain is the number one reason people will come see me. When it comes to your own personal body, your feet are the first thing to let you know that they're having a problem. We can deal with, you know, shoulder pain, elbow pain, hip pain, all kinds of different pains relatively well because we baby them, we hide them. But when we're on our feet every day, you know the second you get up in the morning that this hurts, this isn't right. And that's usually the very first thing someone comes to see me for.
Is there something now bone-related, obviously, you know, joint-related, obviously, but what about like neuropathy? Does that fall into your category or does that fall into somebody else's category?
That is a very loaded question and one I'm glad you asked. I see countless patients for neuropathy, and it's probably one of the harder parts of any physician's job because the list of things that can cause neuropathy is mile high. The most common in the United States is diabetes. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of patients will come to me and say, I can't feel my feet, or they're burning, they're tingling. Can you help me? And the sad reality is there's not a lot I can do because it's not actually a foot problem. There's nothing wrong with your feet other than the symptoms are there.
Right.
And it's a neurological condition that has affected those nerves down there, but there's not a lot I can personally do for you. Now, because I see so many patients with neuropathy, I've come up with tips and tricks that I help them and I help them manage their symptoms. And so I never turn those patients away or say, you know, I can't help you. But unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of marketing out there too, trying to sell these patients with neuropathy on like lasers or specialized treatments. I saw it a lot back in Denver. They try to get you to pay $5,000 and they'll wave a magic wand over you and hope that it will go away. And
when some nutritionist is saying, change your diet.
Yeah. Well, some of the causes of neuropathy are like a vitamin B12 deficiency. Those are the reversible types, but most of them are not reversible and most of them are not so simple. And so changing your diet never hurts.
Right. But especially if you're not eating well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That never hurts. If I notice foot and ankle pain, do I call you directly, or do I need to go to my primary care physician and have them call you?
That's also a great question, and one we face a lot. And the answer is it's up to your insurance company. That's the truth of the matter.
So if you're paying cash, doesn't matter?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah. Some insurances allow you to directly schedule with podiatry specifically, and they treat us like a primary care provider. But some of them do treat us like a specialist and have the specialist copay and all that other stuff. That's the part of my job I don't like. I wish anyone would just have easy access to me.
Right. Yeah. Let the admin part go to somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Talking with Dr. John Stanger. He is a podiatrist over at Peace Harbor Hospital on this edition of Doc Talk. We'll be back with more right after this.
I am a two-time breast cancer survivor and a big believer in mammograms. I do think they are very important. As a cancer survivor, the journey can be very difficult. But with the right people by your side, anything is possible.
At Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center, you have access to advanced technology and mammogram screenings with enhancements to ensure your comfort. Request your appointment today at peacehealth.org/yes-mama because beating cancer is our mission.
At Peace Health, we believe no one is ever just one thing. Everyone has a story. They're our patients and neighbors, our friends and coworkers. They're the people who make our community so vivid and rich. That's why we don't see a broken bone, a cough, or a medical chart. We see you. Peace Health, Peace Harbor Medical Center, Florence. Practicing medicine with dignity, love, and understanding across the Pacific Northwest.
I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. John Stanger. He's a podiatrist over at Peace Harbor Hospital, and we're having some great conversations here about what he does for a living. And again, we thank his wife for seeing that in him. What type of medical? Well, I guess we did touch on the medical education already. So let's skip over that. Is foot pain normal?
Maybe.
Maybe. Oh, that's maybe. Another one of those loaded questions there.
I would say constant foot pain is not normal. Some foot pain that you can associate with recent activity is normal. We definitely see bouts of something called plantar fasciitis. This is hallmarked as heel pain with the first step in the morning. That can be normal, but oftentimes if it's not going away, it you'll end up in my office so that I can help educate and treat you. And so most foot pain is, you know, probably not normal, but just like anything else with the body, if you've done something uncomfortable, run around barefoot for a few hours, then I would expect you to have some pain that can persist for a little bit.
In a week's time, I'll run 2 to 3 miles 3 or 4 times a week. One day I'll run, I'll have pain the next day. But then it'll be gone. So it's like it's not permanent. So is it just like a stress or an overuse of it for one period of time, and then it kind of just goes back to normal? What are some of the things that could cause that?
So that's a good question, and I have follow up questions for that. If it's a new activity to you, then this is probably a normal thing. Anytime I see a patient start a new activity regimen or exercise regimen, I would expect there to be some pain and discomfort. But if you've been running 2 to 3 times per week, 2-3 miles, and you've been doing this for the last 20-30 years, pain-free, and now all of a sudden you're having pain, that's a good indication to come see me because there's something going on.
Yeah, I haven't been doing it that long. I tell people I saved my body till I was in my 50s. So I have people that have been running, like our athletic director, Chris Johnson, who had to stop running. And I'm like, well, I'll never have to stop because I didn't start till I was 50. It's a joke. I mean, I understand that there's some fallacies in that comment there, but at the same time, I think, well, my joints must be better because I haven't overused them in all those years.
Maybe.
Do you see folks or encounter folks with other illnesses during your treatment, or is there something that you can see in the foot that's an indicator of something else that's going on in the body?
Absolutely, all the time. Typically, I can walk right in the door, and if there's particular things that I see, it can be a very good indication of something else going on. Sometimes that often means I'm the first person seeing it before maybe primary care or whatnot. Some examples are like clubbing of the toenails and fingernails can often mean that there's something going on with the lungs and would require maybe a CT scan of the lungs. I've encountered that frequently, actually, as you check your hands.
I love that.
Yeah, because that means decreased oxygenation. So the hardest thing with the foot is it's the furthest part from your heart. So it's usually the last thing to heal and the last thing that the body gives any credence to. And so sometimes it can be one of the first places that something starts arising. Another example would be like psoriasis. I often see psoriasis in the foot and, you know, maybe they don't have it anywhere else. And so, well, now it might be time to see a dermatologist or possibly even a rheumatologist.
Is that the same thing we used to call athlete's foot or is it different?
Definitely different.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the difference between?
So psoriasis, you usually see changes in the nails. Athlete's foot, you'll see it's a moccasin distribution on the bottom of the foot of some dry, flaky skin, some redness, and some itching typically.
I remember, another personal story. I remember as a kid going to my grandmother's house in the mountains of New York in the Catskills and went out in the water and my feet got wet a few times. And for like a year after that, I had this horrible like itching, scratching in between my toes and everything. So obviously I picked up some sort of fungus.
Yeah.
And it eventually went away, but it was like, goodness gracious, boy, that was just.
Yeah. And they can persist for sometimes months.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Or longer than that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about orthotics. I mean, you see a lot of this on television. You know, you see the Dr. Scholl's commercials. You see these other commercials. You got these people sending out these clay things. You put your feet in and you send them back to them. Tell me about orthotics and how they work in your world.
So orthotics usually come in two flavors for the most part, something we call accommodative and then another type that we call functional. Now, accommodative is exactly what it sounds like. It is meant to accommodate like a foot deformity. Maybe you had a large bunion or, as you mentioned earlier, maybe some high arched feet. It would accommodate those types of deformities and help somebody ambulate or walk with less pain than what they normally would in regular shoes, because regular shoes just aren't built to really accommodate high arches or flat arches or arthritis in the foot and ankles.
They basically deal to the average foot of the human being, and they don't do the over and under stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Then the other type, functional foot orthotics, these are the ones that probably have a little more power in the younger decades of life. They are designed to make the foot work a very particular way. The foot is just a very fancy lever and pulley system. You have levers and pulleys on each side of the ankle, and when we use a functional orthotic, it changes the way that those work. And there's many reasons to do that. There could be reasons such as something called flat foot, acquired flat foot, which is more commonly seen in kids. Cavus foot, which is a high arch foot type. There's something called a skew foot. There's weakness in certain tendons that you can have. But nonetheless, those are probably more appropriate for someone in the younger range or someone who is an athlete or something like that that would require the foot to fire in a certain way. Some podiatrists are more heavy on orthotics than others. I'm pretty much subscribe to the fact that if something doesn't hurt, I don't like to change it. And so a lot of times I'll have parents bring in their kids and say, my kids have these really horrible flat feet and I want them fixed. And the kid's not having any pain. Well, if they're not having any pain, I probably won't do anything in terms of putting them in an orthotic because they tend to be very expensive too. There are over-the-counter orthotics like you brought up, Dr. Scholl's, things like that. I generally don't recommend most of those that you can find at the grocery store. There's a couple in particular that are good for certain things, such as Power Steps or Super Feet that can be purchased online.
And but you have to know what your need is in order to get the right thing.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And so it usually means visiting with me,
yeah.
And I can kind of steer you in the right direction.
Let me go back to the term you use, cavus foot. Where does that term come from?
That comes from very astutely somebody looking at a foot and going, it looks like a cave.
Okay.
So, and that just signifies a very high arch.
Yeah. I was thinking caveman when I heard you say it. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's going way back there.
Well, this is how intelligent we are in the medical profession. When we see a flat foot, that's called pes planus, for flat as a plane.
Yeah. So. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. Obviously, you must work together with other people in the medical field. We have rehab facilities and stuff like that. How do you work with that? What are some of the ways you might work with other medical doctors in other fields?
That is a great question, and I constantly work with multiple other types of entities. I'll give you a few examples. Most podiatrists work on what's called an outpatient basis. That means you go see them in a private office or whatnot. But here in this local in our local community, it's a smaller community. So I work both in that setting as well as inpatient, which means in the hospital itself. So some people get really sick from something like a diabetic foot wound where they become septic. That means they get very sick. They're infected with something that's really taken a toll on their body. And so a lot of times, again, with the foot being the furthest thing from the heart, we also see compromise in vascular status or the ability for the body to get blood down there. And so I oftentimes will work with an interventional cardiologist, which is someone who can help us reestablish blood flow down there. Sometimes that also involves vascular surgery for the same reason. I work with internists. I work with radiologists. We obviously take a lot of x-rays, similar to an orthopedic provider. I spend a lot of time working with physical therapists if I have to operate on somebody regarding usually a tendon, or if we did some major reconstruction to their foot, they're going to end up doing some physical therapy. I'm sure there's more. I spend a great deal of time working with our wound care providers at Peace Health as well, and as well as the family practitioners and the emergency med doctors frequently.
What are, and this is kind of a weird question, but what are some of the main causes of things like bunions and calluses?
Bad
luck.
What
brings that on? Bad luck, is it really?
Bad luck. So for every bunion I see, you know, a lot of people are like, is this because I wore high-heeled shoes? And I go, well, maybe. You know, there's a lot of different scientific papers on why people get bunions. And for the most part, we know there's a genetic component, but the rest of it is typically, you know, bad luck. And so I'll usually ask a patient, you know, does your mom or dad have it? Do your sisters or brothers? And it's usually a yes, and that's the genetic component.
So we can blame mom and dad.
We can blame mom and dad all the way. The real question is, does it bother you? If it bothers you, we'll do something about it. If it doesn't bother you, we'll let it go. So
here's another weird question that's not on the list here. Have you ever had to do an amputation?
Yes.
Oh. Is that a difficult thing to have to do, or is it difficult to talk to the patient about it? What's the hardest part about it? I mean, because obviously, in order to save their life, sometimes you have to do things that are, you know.
Yeah, it is a constant. There's no easy answers here, to be completely honest with you. It is the surgery itself is incredibly easy because we're removing something as opposed to, say, fixing a bunion. You know, that's something somebody wants done right. They want it to look very nice when it's done. That's a deformity they want corrected. But with an amputation, it's literally life or limb on the line. And so, you know, I typically approach this as a limb preservation. I never want to first of all, I never want anyone to ever have to undergo an amputation.
Right.
And so a lot of pride that podiatrists take is preventing that in the first place. You know, we do routine surveillance on our neuropathic and diabetic patients to try to prevent that from the first place. And a lot of times it is preventable. But when it gets out of hand and we have to do it, the conversation does become pretty difficult. Denver, I trained at one of the major trauma hospitals in the country, Denver Health Denver Health and Hospital Authority. And this was a daily thing for us, mostly due to a patient access standpoint. And so, you know, those conversations are difficult when you have to tell somebody that they're going to lose most of their foot or some of their foot. And some people take that better than others, obviously. And so it's not a fun part of my job, but
so
I do it.
To circle back around then, let's go back to the young man who was operating stores or businesses before medical school. And if someone would have told you that you would have had to do that at some point in your life, what would your thoughts have been then?
Well, not knowing anything about medicine, I probably would have told them they were crazy.
Yeah.
But that being said, I'm very inquisitive, and so I'm always trying to find better ways to do things. And so, you know, in this day and age, I'm always researching different ways to make this a better process. And currently that's been working out where I'm doing some newer stuff that we haven't seen in the past, where maybe it's more of a minimally invasive approach where we're not doing big, huge incisions, or it's loading up the bones with a special type of cement that has antibiotic in it. which is one of the biggest challenges with foot and ankle surgery, is getting antibiotic down there in the first place.
Right, because if you have poor circulation anyway, chances are you're not going to get a whole lot of what you need down there.
Yeah, and yeah. I would say we've already had some, you know, without giving out patient information, we've had some pretty good success with that here locally already, and something I don't think had been even considered here in the past.
Are there things like the hyperbaric oxygen chamber? Is that helpful for some of those things, or is that more for different kind of wounds?
That is actually very helpful for some of those things. It helps with oxygen saturation to the wound site. That's something I dealt with quite a bit coming from the Mile High City. Here locally, though, we're at sea level. The hyperbaric probably doesn't add a whole lot, but I'm not going to say it's not worth doing.
Right.
If we can do anything to save a limb, we will.
I was reading somewhere that, you know, before the industrial age, the oxygen levels in the atmosphere were like 26% higher than they are today. So people probably weren't having some of those same problems that we're now experiencing today.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. Dr. John Stanger, thank you so much. What a pleasure. Welcome aboard. How long have you been here?
I have been in Florence since June.
Since June. Well,
yeah.
Welcome. You got here just in time for the rainy season.
Yeah, I love the rainy season, though.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You have been listening to Doc Talk, presented by Peace Health Peace Harbor Medical Center. For more information on the program and services provided, visit peacehealth.org.